Podcast.
This week is National Adoption Week in Scotland. That's from the 16th to 20th of November, and we take this week to celebrate adoption in Scotland and all those who are involved in providing loving and supportive family environments for children and young people. And so this week I wanted to talk to Mark Lyons. So Mark is Senior Manager for Children's Resources, Children, Family and Justice Services within our Health and Social Care Partnership. And Mark's going to talk to me a little bit more about what's involved in adoption and the other forms of care and support that's available for young people. So here's our conversation. So hi, Mark. We're talking today because it's National Adoption Week. So maybe a good place to start is if you could say a little bit more about what adoption is.
Well, I start off with National Adoption Week. So it's a national, in fact, an international event just to celebrate and raise awareness of adoption and the role that that plays in offering children new starts and new families. So adoption's been around forever. In Scotland, it first really became a legal concept in about the 1930s. And it's a legal process by which a child or a group of children from a family who can't live with their own birth family become full and permanent legal members of a new family. So it actually extinguishes all of the previous rights and responsibilities from the birth family, ends that relationship, and gives the new family all of the legal rights and responsibilities over that child. They can change the child's name, they can get a new birth certificate, and they get all of the legal rights that any other birth parent would actually have. The difficulty with adoption, I suppose, is lots of us have a vision of what it is, which is probably based on experiences from the 50s and 60s, which was about childless couples looking for a baby. And it was often about lots of young women coming to Glasgow and the rest of Scotland, catching themselves pregnant. Terminations weren't an option. There was a lot of stigma about being a single parent. So there was quite a large pool of babies. And that's what a lot of us think about it. And maybe that sort of call the midwife image of adoption. Mm-hmm. But things have moved on very significantly since then. There are some babies that are relinquished at birth, very, very few of them. Most of the children that we're looking for adoptive families for and are adopted will have suffered some kind of traumas in their early life. So they'll have been brought up in a family maybe with abuse or neglect, witnessing parental mental health or drugs or alcohol problems or domestic violence. Social work will have been involved with on a multi-agency basis to try and help make changes in that family. But they'll have reached the point where it isn't safe for that child to grow up in their own family, and we have to look for other options. Our first port of call would always be to look at whether there's anything in the wider family. So actually about 40% of the children in care in Argyle are actually looked after by a family member. It might be an older brother or sister, an aunt, an uncle, or increasingly grandparents, and they're offering the children that permanent route. But where that's not available, we would be looking at whether or not a family would be appropriate to adopt.
Yeah, and I suppose what you describe it, I mean, it makes it really important to celebrate things like Adoption Week to just call out how special the parents are that adopt and provide that much needed support, isn't it? It's a really special role that we look for in people.
It absolutely is. And adoption gives the adoptive parent something, but it's predominantly a service for the child.
Yeah.
It's giving that child and those children a fresh start. It's helping them recover from all that they've been through. And adoption is for life. You know, it isn't just for the childhood. They're part of a family forever, and that doesn't go away.
Yeah, and that's so important, I think. It's so important that for life, because even in caring for children in the sense that we're responsible as an organisation, and that's really important, but there's always that legal sense that it now finishes at 26, but you know, there's so much more than that that we all need support with through life, and that's what makes adoption so important, doesn't it?
I mean, you know, I'm definitely older than 26, and my mum and dad are still important to me.
Absolutely.
That never stops when you're part of a family.
Yeah, absolutely. And you touched on there are different supports, and you were kind of describing what we talk about as kinship care, but there's lots of different ways of providing a home for children that need it, isn't there?
So we'd normally be looking at adoption for younger children. What's a big disappointment is actually it's really hard to find families that will adopt older children. So we do have children at late primary and into their teens that aren't going to go home, who desperately need a family, but actually maybe they're really invested in their previous family and got really strong links with them, but know they can't live with them. Extinguishing all those rights and responsibilities isn't going to work for them. So we're often looking for foster families, families that can take the child on, accept that they're still part of a different family. They're not going to have all the rights and responsibilities, and that they'll maybe need lots of ongoing support from education and social work and other services to meet those child's needs. And that's the area where we're really lacking in the number of carers that we've got. And that's the area we really want to grow going forward, providing those permanent homes to older children who can't return to their birth family.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll touch on it. But if anybody is listening and they're interested in taking on that kind of role, we'd definitely like to hear from them. And we could talk a bit about the support that's available, because providing that, that degree of support and a degree of stability and permanence is important, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a long-term commitment. I mean, I think it's interesting, there's loads of myths around about who can and can't adopt. First of all, in a legal sense, if you're over 21, if you're a resident in the UK for over 12 months, and you don't have any serious convictions on your record for violence or neglect of children or serious sexual offences of that nature, you can potentially adopt. So the net is really quite wide. Just run through some of the common myths.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a homeowner. Yeah, you don't have to be a homeowner. We're increasingly seeing people from the LGBTQ community coming forward and offering homes. You don't have to have had children yourself, but also you might be older and have had children who have flown the nest and you feel you can offer something more into a family. You don't technically need a spare bedroom, but actually if you are going to offer a home to a child, particularly older children, they are going to need their own separate bedroom. So we'd need to work with you to make sure that you could actually have those facilities. Health and disability, that doesn't automatically exclude you from being an adoptive parent. We need to be sure that you're not going to keel over within the lifetime of the child. Yeah. But beyond that, most of us have some kind of underlying health problem that doesn't stop us being a parent and offering a family to our children. So why would that stop someone being an adoptive parent? And the other bits about the reasons for adoption. You know, we have some people that want to adopt because they've experienced infertility or there are other reasons they can't have children of their own. And that's a particularly valid reason. But as I said, we've got an increasing number of single people who want to adopt. And that can be very appropriate for some young people and children going forward. LGBTQI, very, very appropriate. And a lot of older couples coming forward and older single people who believe they can offer something more. So you've got a group of people that want it because it's add something to their life, but nearly all of them want it because they can add something to the child's life, that they want to be a parent and to give something back.
Yeah, and I think we were both at a meeting recently and hearing about why that's important, and you know, really because the life chances of care experienced people are often not as good as those that don't have that experience, and you know, that sense of where people, as you describe, who might not otherwise think it but could really offer something positive and increase the life chances of of those young people. And I think I'm looking back at what we were hearing about, and you'll be able to talk about it much more in a much more well-informed basis than me. But earlier death rates, a higher proportion of prisoners of care experienced, higher instance of mental health diagnosis, higher instance of homelessness, unemployment, the really significant impacts in a number of areas where if somebody is listening and is even sort of thinking about it, as you describe, I think it's there are lots of ways where they might be able to make a difference that they wouldn't naturally have thought about it, and just thinking through how much difference that could make in a young person's life, because that's what we're all about. When certainly when we talk normally about these things, that's the real underpinning goal of what we're trying to do, is make these young people feel loved and supported and understood and respected in what they want to try and achieve.
I mean, absolutely. If you've lived the first years of your life in a really hostile environment where you've suffered, you've never felt secure and safe, you've never had a loving attachment to your parent, who your mum's been inconsistent to, your dad's been violent to your mum, that really leaves a mark on you for your rest of your life. And one of the best ways to help recover from that is to do that within a family, which can actually rebuild some of those bonds, help build that resilience, give that unconditional love and support, and to re-establish boundaries. Now, that's not always an easy job. Rebuilding trust can be very difficult, and longer-term adoption can be particularly challenging for some in the teenage years, when we all get our identity issues and we all get confused about it. And there's nothing worse you can throw against your parent than, "You're not my real mum," "You're not my real dad." Most adoptive families, definitely over 50%, make it through with no more challenges or difficulties than any other family in the community. But for the other half, there will be challenges that are often about issues of identity, who you are. And that's why these days, adoptions are often described as open. So the children will know why they've come into care, they'll know about their history. There'll maybe be some form of contact with the birth parents to let them know how things are going. But the idea that you're adopted and you don't know you're adopted and you don't find out suddenly until you're 18, which has been the script of many a soap opera, I think, that is not the reality today. Children will actually know who their parents are, will have a very confused picture. And can you imagine how difficult it is at 14, 15, when you're trying to work out who you are, how easy it is to actually find your original parent? You just get yourself on Facebook, and I'm sure you can track it down really, really quickly. We all watched Davina McCall reuniting children with their parents having been through adoption, but that's not the world that our children are living through at the moment, and what we're trying to guide and support them through. So we definitely need to get better at how we support families that are offering a permanent home long term to understand and support their children through that. As I said, most of them will get through with no more problems than any other family, and things that they can get over. But for some, there's definitely a need for additional help and support further down the line.
And maybe it's worth mentioning, in case any young people are listening that either got some experience of this or know somebody that has. But I think a lot of people who are not aware of the system would perhaps be surprised of the level of involvement that the young person has now in what suits them and what they want, and the support that is available to them either through social work or Who Cares Scotland or various organisations who are actually there to advocate for the young person themselves.
I mean, absolutely, the whole legal process around care experienced children, around adoption, around fostering is absolutely focused on the welfare of the child, their rights, our responsibilities towards them, UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, absolutely underpinning everything we do. And at the end of the day, you can't make a family work if the young person isn't ready for it and doesn't want to make it work. So they're central to making those decisions and going forward. But I suppose the other thing to remember is, we all have colleagues who have been adopted. we may not know it, but actually, you know, a lot of people that are colleagues of us, or friends of us, have been adopted at various stages in their life. And there are a range of supports for people to cope with that. People can access their own original birth records, find out who their parents were and what the stories of that were. And there are usually support mechanisms put around that, because it's not an easy process necessarily. And often people have more questions than are ever answered. A lot of people do want to seek out their original parents in later life. Sometimes it's when you start having children yourself and you really want to find out. Sometimes you just become curious. But there are support mechanisms to do that. And we actually have to keep adoption records for 100 years, or at least until the person is 100. So those records are held. Disappointingly, the further you go back in time, the lighter those records are. So adoption records from the 1930s are often relatively light, a couple of letters, notes of a home visit and a report to the court. These days, you can be talking about multiple files, drawers of a filing cabinet full of history of what's happened. And navigating and understanding that is pretty challenging and needs a fair bit of support to do it. But those supports are out there. And anyone that looks online, there's plenty of ways to access it.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I know you, the point you make is a very good one. I've got a good friend who's adopted, and you know, so I think most of us you will probably find that if we were to think about it. And you know, what you've described there in terms of the information is just indicative of what you've described of how the system has changed and things have moved on, and you know, how much more we know about it and we think about it, and you try to create, you know, the right environment, and you know, it's just a, it's a bit more of a sophisticated process than it once was, perhaps. And I think it's, you know, that all of that is still moving on, and we're still challenging ourselves. I know, you know, we had a development session with a range of people who are involved in caring for young people, just constantly challenging the way we do things. And you know, that was, I think that was a big feature of our discussion, actually, if we should be open to just see how we can do things better all the time. And you know, that's what a lot of parents would do. You know, that's what we should do as that having that responsibility. And I think, you know, I'm always really struck by how thoughtful all the people are that are involved in the services that get around young people, about how we can do that in the best way possible. It's maybe worth touching on the care of you, which and the promise, which you know, that's fundamentally what that's about, is trying to create a better system to support young people.
I mean, the National Care Review is really a very, very impressive piece of work across Scotland. So it was a piece of work over a couple of years where they actually went out and listened to the voices of something like 5,500 people, some who were care experienced themselves, the majority were, but also carers and families, to actually look at what their experience and learning was. And really, there's a very powerful message coming through that we, just as I've talked about changing from what adoption used to be in the 30s to the 50s to what it is these days, actually we need to change the whole care system. Scotland takes probably too many children into care and out of their families. How do we keep more of them safe at home within those families? And what do we need to wrap around our families to make that work? What are the skills that the workforce needs? Who else needs to play a part in that? Poverty is clearly very significant, but where do we go with that in terms of helping keep families together? And then for those children that can't stay with their families, how do we keep more children together? Because we actually separate too many groups of children, too many brothers and sisters having to grow up separately because we don't have the families to keep them together. How do we actually have permanent families for children for as long as they need them? Too many children move between different households or different care arrangements. You can't thrive, you can't survive if you don't feel settled and secure, you don't feel that this is your home and you know that you're going to stay there. What's it like to be constantly worrying about whether you're going to move or whether things are going to change? So a big, big push. And the other thing that's been really important about it for Scotland is it's put the voice of lived experience absolutely at the centre of driving forward that change agenda. The Scottish government's totally signed up to it. There's some interesting things on National Adoption Week that Nicola Sturgeon has recorded for it. John Swinney is absolutely pushing forward the promise at all levels of government at the moment. And I think you can maybe remember back to the SNP conference 3-4 years ago, when actually there was a quantum change and the whole Scottish Parliament accepted that it needed to do much, much better for its care experienced children, commissioned the independent care review, and is now pushing forward agenda to fundamentally restructure and improve the way we look after children that can't stay with their family, to find more ways to keep children with their families and to make sure that they have the best outcomes we can give them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would agree with you. It's a really impressive piece of work. And, I did some initial promotion at the time it came out, and I know we're committed to work on the things that are recommended within it, because I don't think you could disagree with anything that's in there about what we can do better, especially when it's come direct from people with that lived experience. And you know, it brings it home to me, I think, when we're dealing with COVID and things, you know, just imagine what some of the situations that we're all struggling with actually feel like if you're a young person who's experiencing challenges at home, or you're care experienced, or you're not in a permanent home, and just how important it is to try and find the best possible solutions for that, because that's, you know, we all want a loving environment. And when things are so uncertain and, you know, either in lockdown or in other restrictions, just having that around you and that stability is, you know, it's difficult for those of us who've not experienced anything like that to imagine what it's like to not have that. Like you say, I've still got my parents around and things. It's, you know, and if you don't have that, that's tough. And
yeah, I mean, how tough is it? I mean, I might be the bank of mum and dad, but I'm the emotional bank of mum and dad.
Yeah.
So I may be the bank of mum and dad, but I'm also the emotional bank of mum and dad.
Yeah.
And I think both bits are equally important to my children as they step into an independent world.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good way of referring to it, because not many kids these days sort of don't need some support, you know, right up into, you know, well beyond their teens and 20s and things. It's, you know, we all sort of end up calling on that from time to time, I think. And maybe before we finish up, it's worth talking about, you know, some of the more recent things. And that, you know, I was really pleased to hear recently that we were able to provide support to two unaccompanied asylum seekers in the area, and that's sometimes been challenging for us to find, you know, the ways we can support those young people. But it's fantastic to be able to do that. And maybe you want to talk about that and what helps us offer that support.
Yeah, so I mean, that's a really interesting journey that we've been on with that, because I think a few years back, in our goal, I don't think we felt we could offer homes to unaccompanied asylum seeking children. And I think we've learned a lot about ourselves. I think the first bit that was really impressive was the work we did with the Syrian families on Bute.
Yeah.
That showed what we are capable of doing when we all pull ourselves together, and what our communities in Argyll and Bute are capable of doing. The second thing is we actually ended up with some over the last few years, we've had four unaccompanied asylum seeking children who were found working in Argyle, nail bars, cannabis farms, those sorts of things. And we were able to offer homes for them and to help bring them up. And now we've moved on to the point that we can take children under the National Transfer Scheme. So that's the children that are arriving, that we're seeing on our telly every night on the south coast of England, coming in under the axles of lorries or in these inflatable boats. And we're now able to offer. So we've just taken two in the last couple of weeks. We'll look at our reflection on that and see what we can move forward. And I think that's part of a Scottish effort to try and improve the way we support the UK in doing that. My absolute sympathies go out to those local authorities on the south coast that are inundated. And I think we all have a moral duty to do what we can with it and see how it goes. It'll be an interesting journey for us going forward, but there's absolute commitment to making it work and to use the experience that we've got with our first few young children, but also with the Syrian refugees, and put our shoulder to the wheel with it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's been some real heartwarming stories that have come out of the Syrian refugees work, and just the warm welcome that they've had on Bute from that community, and the fantastic contribution they're making to the community. And yeah, you know, using that experience and helping others, it's just so great that we can play our part and support that. It just continues to emphasize the need that there is for to get people involved and to support that effort, because you're absolutely right. There's a moral imperative there for all of us, I think, to work on that. So if people want to get involved, Mark, and consider adoption or some other form of support like fostering, what should they do to find out more about it and to pursue that?
Okay. All right, so there's three groups of people that we're really, really keen to hear from. So families that feel they can offer an adoptive home, families or individuals that feel they could be foster parents and take a child either for a short period of time or throughout the rest of their life, but not take on all of everything to do with that, particularly if you're interested in an older child, which means late primary or into secondary school. But the other group is if you're interested in supported lodging schemes. So this is where you'd be a supportive landlady, maybe to a care experienced young person moving into independence. And they could be part of your household, but you'd be a supportive landlady to them. So the process would be, I would always encourage people to do a bit of thinking and reflection first. Do a bit of Googling online and find out a bit more about it. And then you can make contact with our fostering and adoption team, and the number's on the council's website. The process for all three is broadly similar. The first stage would be we usually run some sort of before we get into any assessment process, we'll do some kind of meeting and reflection about understanding the role you're taking on, initial screening in terms of your suitability, that there's nothing that rules you out. If that all goes okay, we would move you into a formal assessment process where we usually takes about 4 months plus, where we'll go through you more than you would probably expect. But we'll really get to know you. You'll really get to know more about yourself within that. We'll provide you with additional training. We'll then move forward to a formal report that will be approved. We are formally an adoption agency. We approve our own adoptive parents and our own foster carers. So probably about 6 months down the line, if all goes well, there'll be a formal decision. And then following that, there'll be a process of matching you two children. So not all families are right for all children. Some offer different skills. So we would look at matching. If you're wanting to adopt a baby, the odds are pretty slim and the wait could be quite long. If you're interested in an older child or a group of children, the options may come quicker. But it's as adoption and fostering is about the needs of the child, it's important that they come first and that we make sure that those matches are right going forward. And that can take months. If you're approved adoptive parent, we would look nationally across Scotland, because every year it's about 350 to 400 children are adopted, and probably that number again sitting waiting for families and not able to have them. But as I said, some of those children have had very, very difficult starts in life, and matching, understanding you and what you offer and that child and what they need is really important to a long-term success going forward. But if you're interested, do a little bit of Googling, do a little bit of reflection, talk to your family, because it involves everyone that's an adult, and it involves your own children if you've got them, and get in touch with us. We'll talk you through and take it through step by step.
Yeah, and I think that's the key message, isn't it? There's lots of support available there for every step of the way. And maybe it's worth just highlighting what sort of numbers are we talking about already in Argyll? How many adoptive children have we got, and children in care? Give people a sense of scale of the issue.
Okay, so at the moment, Argyll, actually, we have fewer children coming into our physical care than in most other areas in Scotland. We keep that pretty low. It's usually about 110-ish is the total number of children that we are actually actively looking after at a particular time. Each year we'll do about 3 to 4 children end up going through the full adoptive process. About 40% of our children we're supporting to be formally looked after by a member of their extended family or wider family network in a kinship arrangement. And increasingly that's one of our main routes towards permanence. We've got about 42-ish children, 42-ish foster placements available at any one time, and probably about 30 children living with foster carers at the moment, and the remainder are in residential care, children's houses. For some of them, that is absolutely the right place. Our children's houses are really good. Some of them have really complex needs, are in specialist national resources, but we actually have too many children in our residential houses and desperately need more families so that they can have that best possible start into life that is best and right for them. Isn't right for everyone, but for too many it isn't the best option.
Yeah, no, and you know, it's I think that gives a sense to people of, you know, what it is that we're talking about, and just hearing those numbers. And maybe as well, just, are there any particular organisations, websites you would recommend? Because I know I've had a quick look with it being Adoption Week, and there's quite a lot of resource out there of, you know, people sharing experience and resources and things that can help families that are providing adoption or fostering, or and the young people that are living through that as well. But do you have any you particularly recommend, Mark?
What we'll do is we'll give you some links to go alongside this.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be the easiest way to do it. Yeah, we'll sort out some links.
We'll put them on the website for anyone that's listening to be able to follow through and look at those, because I think there's an awful lot out there, you know, anytime, but particularly this week. It's maybe just to finish off and do a sort of final call out to all those that do get involved and are providing that adoption support, or fostering, or kinship care, or all the different varieties of support. Big, big thank you. I mean, it's relevant all the time, but particularly in Adoption Week, we want to call out and just thank everybody for the work that they do. It's absolutely fantastic and so, so important for our young people.
It's an immense piece of work, and it's genuinely life-changing.
Yeah.
As a carer, it changes your life, and you get a chance to really change children's lives and give them opportunities they would never have had, and to see them grow throughout their lives. A just absolutely awesome task to take on.
Yeah, what a fantastic positive way to end. So thank you for that, Mark. There's loads of information in there for people to take on that and just get a sense of what's involved and how it's changed and evolved. So thank you for that, and for the time to talk to me about it. That's great.
Pleasure to do it. Thank you.
So hopefully from that conversation, you'll get a bit more of an insight into adoption and what's involved, and also the different ways in which you can support children and young people. And I suppose what I take from it is where we ended up and Mark's final comments, that this can be life-changing for young people, And so if you're interested in getting involved, really encourage you to find out a little bit more and to get in touch with the team. So we'll make sure that there's details on the website of where you can get in contact with the adoption team and where you can find more resources and information. And if you are an adopter, just once again, a massive big thank you. Same to our foster carers and kinship carers and all those who are supporting our young people out there. And we'll also include links where you can find more information for National Adoption Week that can support you or the young people that are adopted or fostered or in care. So I hope you enjoyed that and found it informative. Thanks a lot for listening.